SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday. Race fans from Colonial Downs, Colonial Rosies, and absolutely glorious New Kent, Virginia, the Colonial Williamsburg area, as threatened last week. Was it Jill? I guess it was Jill that said, you should come down. Okay. So here we are. It doesn't take much. It does not take much to get me and Tina into the car and down to your local racetrack. Really have had a fabulous weekend, and we figured, you know what? Why not take advantage of this? And so Friday after the show, we jumped down and drove, slipped in a little crab cake action in Baltimore, and made it to Williamsburg at about 11:30 on Friday night. So we have had a beautiful weekend. Got to explore, got to take part in yesterday's carryover and a lot of Saturday action and Friday too, actually. That's the beauty. That's the beauty of having the Tina. The Tina gets behind the wheel. I've got it to the point where she hates me driving so much and is so unnerved by my driving, and I play up the bad eye, the whole bit, and so now she drives everywhere, and that leaves me free to, you know, to play Friday's races and handicap Saturday and everything else. Well, it tremendous weekend. We've got lots to cover, obviously, but we do have to get a certain lay of the land here, because you're going to think that I'm coming to you from Churchill Downs and not Colonial Downs, because up in the press box, up on the top floor, and the first face, other than Jill Byrne, which makes you feel like you're in Kentucky, the next face I see is Don Winfrey, the legend himself, up here doing the clocking with Churchill closed. Winfrey moved his tack and comes to Colonial, and he's doing the numbers up here and on the top floor of this absolutely beautiful layout. And you want to talk about a serene setting. They've got, I'm going to talk at some point, I'm sure, to Daryl Wood, and probably knows a little better than Jill in terms of the history of the, right, of the environment. And they carved out this racetrack in the 90s, and you know, it's been an interesting journey. I mean, certainly over the last, call it 10 years, we've talked quite a bit. In fact, Frank Petromalo is going to visit the Virginia Equine Alliance, and between Frank and Debbie Easter over the years, when Colonial, you know, kind of blew the turn, the Jacobs family, there was an uncertain future here, and the future has really arrived, and the terrific purses and a facility that was completely gutted and renovated, beautiful gaming facility downstairs. They've really done an amazing job. It's been a total success. Last year, of course, they had to deal with both pandemic and with some weather woes. Might be a little bit of thunderstorm activity come through here. It is hot and sunny and warm, and you can sort of sense that might happen at some point this afternoon. But for now, and for our purposes, it's absolutely glorious. There is a terrific card, actually, to be considered as well today. And you've got three stakes, the DeHaas, the Buckland, and the Andy Guest. So, and really the rest of the card as well, quite good. And in fact, you know what? I'm sure Woodbury might be in the car driving over from Middleburg, and, Woodbury, you got to come upstairs, and we'll get him in here too. I couldn't get him to talk last Thursday, but Woodbury will be here to steward the two jump races that start the card. it is a weird scenario. The first and second races are actually the 10th and the 11th in your program. Yeah, there's a maiden special 2-mile jump race that starts the card at 12:15. And one of the fun little horse stories in that race that starts things off, Oh Dionysus, that Connor Murphy's got. And or not Connor, Cyril Murphy's got, that you know from the flat, from his excellent flat career. He's trying to break a maiden over the hurdles. In fact, not that there's betting, but was made 7-2. If you know, for those of you that are betting amongst yourselves, I suppose there's also a handicap. So a 2-mile maiden race and a 2.25-mile handicap to start the card, and then the flat action gets rolling at 1:45, and the first stake, the De Haas, goes off at 3:09. They're going to go 5.5 in the De Haas, 100,000. You've got Michelle Lovell, who is going to join us. That's another reason why it feels like it feels like Kentucky and Virginia. Michelle is going to come upstairs. She's got Just Might, the 9-5 favorite in that De Haas. You got a few in there that are interesting. Steve Asmussen's got Boldore. We talked about him last week. He actually scratched for this spot. He's second choice at 7-2. Maytai went on for Jane Sabelli, Holiday Stone for George Weaver. George's horses are starting to fire at Saratoga. How about the Andy Guest later on this afternoon, 4:33, another turf sprint, and this one for the fillies and mares. You've got 2-1 for Beantown Baby, Arno Delacour. Ain't no Elmers here, and ain't no Elmers for Brett Calhoun, who's a big story this summer. He's got the A team here, including By My Standards, and working out. So interesting, Brett Calhoun. And then the Buckland Stake goes at 5:01, and some familiar names in here as well, including Mr. Dumas. For John Ortiz and Pixelate, who scratched out of the Baltimore-Washington International at Pimlico on Saturday for this spot for Mike Stidham. Tom Van Berg split the wickets in here. This is a good race. Michael Tomlinson's got Mega City, Talker Listen for Arno Delacour, who also has got Eons. Eons has got to be... How old is Eon? Eons has got to be getting up there. Anyway, we've got a really nice card. So let's hope that the thunderstorms do not strafe the area and impact the action. In terms of action away from what's at hand on this Monday, Eons is only 5. Actually, I thought boy, it feels like he's been around for longer than that. The weekend, and it's hard not to start the discussion with Saturday. And discussed this yesterday on TV with Seth Merrow in terms of the way in which people approach the home.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
We're back.
Why, in the past decade, has been a
Might have been me. Case.
Generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
We're back, and not sure what end, what side of the action cut us off, but here we are. And I'm not sure where I lost you or you lost me, but started talking about the coaching club American Oaks and the importance of just seeing an opportunity and nominating and, you know, and taking a shot. This is really... Not that Maracuja and Beach Haven and Rob Atras were just simply taking a shot. They were following up from the very good and impeded try that that she had suffered in Kentucky. And I tweeted after the... It's funny. I tweeted after the race because I should have thought of it earlier. But, you know, I heard from... Frank Magui, actually. Magui reminded me, I mean, they hadn't crossed the wire, and I get a text from Magui saying, Paul Matisse told anybody that wanted to listen after Derby Oaks weekend, Maracuja deserves a mulligan, and that her trip absolutely was a legitimate excuse, and if you had any interest in her, and there was interest in her, you know, as an alternative in the Oaks. And all credit to Rob Atras for just refocusing and circling this and making this the target, the Oaks, and then the execution by Ricardo Santana Jr. And, you know, part of it, obviously, is, you know, the way in which the race unfolded, and you know, be very clear that she was hounded, Malathat. It's not like, you know, it's not a case where she was loping along. The other issue in this is one of the reasons why everybody, not just horse players, you know, trainers and connections, this is why you want to see 8, 9, 10 horse fields so that you're not put into a position where your horse is asked to do something not necessarily unusual. I mean, it's not that unusual to go to the lead and you know, dictate terms, and plenty of outfits and you know, plenty of horsemen. Baffert certainly you know, approaches races that way. But Malthat, you know, was put into a position where, you know, she became the target instead of, you know, instead of settling, you know, just off the pace and then making her progress and, you know, running to her you know, best scenario. But listen, that's part of the challenge of careers of horses, is them facing adversity and being asked to do things that, you know, test their mettle. That's part of it. And she ran, listen, she ran great. She ran fine. She didn't win. Maracuja was that much better in the end. And I mean, for Santana to kind of back off and have the confidence with her to, you know, to know and to expect that he would have horse when called upon, well, that's tremendous. And it all worked. It all worked. Look, I don't know if we're going to get Rob today. I reached out the first thing this morning. And if not, we'll get him more back in Saratoga tomorrow and maybe even live to have the discussion, because this really was what you aspire to when you, you know, encounter a circumstance and, you know, you regroup and you have a target. So all credit. Absolutely, all credit to Atrus and his team in winning the Grade One, first of his career, and a nice. It's a nice stripe for Honor Code. And you know, didn't we? In fact, I'm looking forward to thinking ahead. I'm thinking about Wednesday's conversation with Sid Fernando, because this is a filly out of an Unbridled Song mare. Didn't we just talk, right, last week with Sid? Unbridled Song came up, and that was the Unbridled Song as broodmare sire. Well, here he gets another, a new Grade One added to his resume as a broodmare sire. And certainly Unbridled Song will, that record will continue to grow, you know, here, you know, after his passing. So, just an aside, a lot of nice stories. Oh, and that's one of the fun things about, you know, racing at this level. Really, everywhere we looked all weekend, and going back to Friday for a second, and looking forward to catching up this week with Chad Brown too. As I was poking fun yesterday on TV, there's nothing wrong with the Chad Brown barn. There's no problems. Chad with the win in the Lake George. I have no idea how technical analysis goes off at 7-1. In fact, I said this yesterday too. I was texting with Nick Tamaro. I said, what is going on here? Because technical analysis was at that point, I think, 8-1 or 9-1, and so was Toby's heart. And those were my two keys in the Lake George. And Nick came back, said she's just dead on the board, and came down a little, but that was very strange. I mean, Jouster, I think I used Jouster just as a C defensively. But I had no interest. I was shocked. I think at the end, by the time we get done at Saratoga this summer, we'll look back and say that was the crazy opportunity, at least at stake level. Because of course Chad comes back with Sifting Sands, and Sifting Sands, I mean, that was a silly price, but that's the benefit of a big field. And I remember when I looked at that race, I thought, well, yeah, not impossible, but you know, I didn't look seriously. But 27-1? That was crazy. A lot of fun wagering scenarios. The first carryover of the meet yesterday, and what, a million? What was bet? A million? Ended up, I think, 1,000,001 yesterday. And you didn't have to overthink that sequence yesterday. I managed to personally, including not using Lime in that first leg, but. There were a couple. There, you know, the maiden winner for Pletcher, the Star Ladies, and Glen Hill, Street Sense filly that misinterpreted. I thought that maiden race was very tricky. No doubt. That one was tough. You could have singled Kaylee's sister. And granted, that race was tricky yesterday because of ended up with Master of Hope, a gate scratch. And I thought Master of Hope, I thought she was okay. And I was not 100% convinced about Kaylee's sister as a you know, big lean. You know, she ended up winning easy. But of course, you know, that's with the other major player having scratched. You had the off the turf race in there where You're to Blame romped. And you know, before I forget, I'll bring this up with Rich Migliori in a little bit too. Rich will join us at 10. You know, one of the conversations we'll have from outside Colonial. Irad Ortiz, last week we talked about Irad and Witt, and you heard Todd Pletcher say that he apologized for, you know, for going to the stick way more than necessary as Witt romped. He did it again yesterday. Did it again with You're to Blame. And I know there's separate conversations to have about You're to Blame in general, but just to focus on Ortiz for a second, for starters, a very clever herding incident from him to get out on the turn. He manages to do it where it's the most difficult to discern from the cameras, and he forces his way out and pushes locally owned, from the 3 path to the 5-6 path. And, you know, survived the inquiry or the objection. But, and I don't think locally owned, you know, the way this ended up, I don't think locally owned, you know, was completely compromised. But, I mean, it's unbelievable. Getting away with anything and everything. And then whacking the runaway winner. I mean, the horse at the top of the stretch, when the horse takes over, is up by a couple of lengths in a few jumps, and must have hit him a half a dozen times. So maybe everybody that's complaining about abuse and unnecessary crop use, maybe they're right. I mean, because this was ridiculous. So I don't know what you got these stewards sitting there. They've got a job. They don't do it. They don't call anybody in. I'll turn this over to Mig. And I mean, they're not asked to do a lot. And one thing they could do, though, is after hours, bring some people in and read them the Riot Act. I mean, it's you know, the calls are going to go either way. And that'll happen. And there'll be calls that, you know, 51% of the public disagree with. That's going to happen. And nobody's going to fault. I get it. But the stuff that could be cured and could be addressed going unaddressed, there's no... What's the explanation for this, for that? Between the herding and, in this case, wanton use of the stick. So that's my complaint for the weekend. The other couple of other spots, and got to slip in. Who didn't I talk about? We had the California action. Let me get that in. I don't want to completely ignore. Oh, Lizzie Merriman. Almost forgot for the Caress. Lizzie Merriman and Bobby Flay, Caravelle, a resounding winner in the grade three. Congratulations to Lizzie. And I know that's a bittersweet situation here where she's turning the horse over now to Graham Motion. And Bobby Flay bought controlling interest. And that's what controlling interest means, that you take control and you get, you know, it's Bobby Flay's horse to make decisions with. So, it's still a happy circumstance for Lizzie, and a grade three win. She, of course, bred Caravelle as well. And you saw how gracious she was about the whole situation. Should also note one other before I move from Saratoga, and before Frank Petromalo joins us in a minute, there was also Caramel Swirl's performance. We should note the Mott Philly. That was impressive. Caramel Swirl under Junior Alvarado. That was one of the non-stake performances that absolutely deserved a mention. So we'll get into a lot of that over the next couple of days. Andy tomorrow, etc., and Mig in a little bit. Out in California, what can you say about United winning that Eddie Reed? This is really a horse that's got a lot of fans, and Flavian Pratt with a really good ride, a terrific performance. United wins the Eddie Reed for Mandela. Mandela had a nice weekend, too, because he won the Daisy Cutter yesterday. And actually, I owe him anyway, because we didn't talk to him last week after Tis a Magician won, right? He won the Cougar 2 last week. So Mandela hitting it on the screws. At Del Mar, Flavian Pratt, too. Madone for Simon Callahan. That was a nice performance under Juan Hernandez. And the San Clemente, Craig DeLazzi, Brando the Bartender, California Dreamin'. You had Steve Sherman with I'm So Anna win the Fleet Tree, too. That was on Friday. So plenty of good Del Mar action to weave into conversation this week. I mentioned the Baltimore-Washington International Turf Cup and the small field. And Mike Baker, kind of had this, had field pass. I'm going to forget what kind of price. I don't have the chart, but goes favored. And wins the Lemon Drop Kid. Victor Carrasco had a very nice afternoon because he also won that Sensible Lady with Can the Queen. The Big Dreyfus. Did I answer the quiz on Friday when I mentioned the Big Dreyfus steak for George Ann Hale? Really nice. And that was Tightly Twisted. And Indian Lake took that Bald Eagle Derby. You look up to Woodbine, the Nassau. Jolie Olympica, too good. Speaking of Mandela, actually, this one was sent for Josie Carroll to handle, and Jolie Olympica wins the Nassau. That was part of the cross country. I should have brought the printer, my printer, which I usually do, but I didn't bring it. So I don't have charts, but I'll look that up before I say what the cross country paid. I don't want to say $6,000? Did it pay $6,000 maybe? Jolie Olympica, logical. You had not really an upset, but you did have to go too deep in the Irish war cry because Kelly Breen wins it with He's Pure Gold. Then the three races at Saratoga. So we'll get that recap in. Those are the highlights, right? That is some of the weekend highlights. Most of the stakes, Cassie and Mrs. Weber. March to the Arch wins the Niagara yesterday. So there's some highlights. I'm going to do this. Let's, Case. Well, that was sort of a break, right? We don't need to. Then, Frank, come over and come here. We'll get Frank Petromalo to sit down. And, there you go. We'll start our conversations. Frank, good morning.
Good morning.
There you go.
Good morning.
It's great to see you. We had so many conversations. I referenced you at the beginning of the show that we're here at Colonial. And during that very difficult period after 2013, and you, keeping a steady hand on the wheel for the horsemen, and now here we are, years later, and this facility reborn, rechristened, and it's to the benefit of the racing industry at large, and certainly to the Virginia equine community.
Well, we were very fortunate in that a new ownership group came in and bought the track from the former owner. And the new ownership group is much more dedicated to racing. And we couldn't have wound up in a better situation.
Oh, it's amazing. And the Revolutionary Racing team, yes. Steve Marshall and John Marshall and Steve Marshall's...
Larry Lucas. And those folks. But the best part is that they brought in a racing team that is top quality. Jill Byrne, the director of racing and the vice president, is an outstanding person to have in charge of racing. And she put together a team. Allison DeLuca is the racing secretary. And it's the quality of racing is so much better than we could have ever hoped for. I mean, for example, this year we're going to be running for 21 days, and our purses on average will be around $550,000 a day. That's very, very good for this little track in the middle of Virginia.
Well, and you know, in terms of the kind of facility it is, I mean, that's part of the appeal here. It's a remarkable piece of property. I mean, talk about the origins. I don't remember ever having this conversation about picking out this swath of land, Kent land. I see at the when you drive in.
Well, there was a good bit of controversy back in the early 90s. Our legislature authorized pari-mutuel wagering on racing toward the late 1980s. And there were a number of bidders that were interested in building a track. Churchill Downs was one. They were interested in Virginia Beach. Joe DeFrancis and the Maryland folks were looking at a spot in northern Virginia closer to Dulles Airport. And there were one or two other groups. And ultimately, I think the Northern Virginia prospect got turned down because of opposition. Virginia Beach, I think, turned out to be too much of a political problem. So there was an opportunity here to pick up a lot of what used to be forest land. And the Jacobs Group ultimately got about 300 acres here. And it's in a very pretty county, but a very rural county. Yeah. And that is both a blessing and a curse because it allowed them to build this wonderful track. The main track is a mile and a quarter around, and the turf course is a mile and an eighth. And as you know, the turf course is probably one of the largest in the country. It's 180 feet wide, which allows us to move the rails every week so that we're all always running on relatively fresh ground. So in terms of a physical facility, we couldn't have asked for much better as horsemen. We have stall space for 1,000 horses on the backside. We've got six dormitory buildings with 240 beds. So we have a wonderful physical plant. We can't complain in the least bit about that.
And a couple of sidebars to that. Frank Petromallo with us from the Virginia Horseman, and you heard Frank with me for years, and Debbie Easter, of course, as well as the wrangling and the back and forths, and eventually the complete disgust and frustration with the Jacobs family. Yeah. And luckily, I said this to Daryl Wood earlier this morning. It ended up being to the benefit of everybody that they walked away and that they relented.
Yeah, I think that's true. And what really I think is in a good part responsible for whatever success we're to Mr. 2014.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com.
Speak to the legislature with a single voice. You know, you always in other states you have the disputes between the breeders and the owners and trainers, or between standard bred and thoroughbred. Well, we don't have that here because of our alliance. So it really is all Debbie Easter's fault.
Well, Debbie, we've had so many conversations with her that. The inclusion of the residency program ended up being just a bonanza, and it very quickly got up to speed while the facility was being renovated, while as you mentioned, the racing team was put back into place, and you were able to put the underpinnings in. In the meantime, it brought mares back to Virginia. It brought new blood, in fact, to Virginia for people to send their babies to get started on how many more mares, how many more Virginia breds are being added annually?
Well, our foal crop has kind of been very small for a whole bunch of different reasons, so that last year we may have had 100 foals here in Virginia, but at the same time the certified program that Debbie and others put together is bringing in 600 or 700 youngsters to come and reside here for 6 months before the end of their two-year-old year. And of course now we're writing races for these quote Virginia certified horses, so that's worked out much better than we expected.
How many facilities, how many farms in Virginia board or start horses as part of the program?
Oh, I don't know the exact number, but I can tell you just based on friends that I've known over the years, there a couple of them actually had to expand their facilities.
That's amazing.
Because they were getting so many youngsters in the program.
It's amazing, and in fact, there was a point. I don't know if it was last year, the year before even, word came that they were virtually at capacity, that nobody could take on any more stock.
Yep.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, it's good. It's a good crazy.
Exactly. For you, it's funny, you mentioned the standardbreds, because standardbreds ran here, I remember, right? How many years were there standardbred races?
Oh, they ran, I think they started racing a year after we started, which was in 1997. And what they used to do is take up the cushion off the main track, and the standardbreds would run a one-turn mile. I don't think there's another track that they've ever done that before.
I don't think I've ever heard of that.
It had its, from my standpoint, it had its plus and minuses. But now the standardbreds are running in Woodstock, Virginia, which is west of here, at a fair track that the Virginia Equine Alliance renovated. But we're hopeful that harness racing will come back here to Colonial Downs in some fashion or other.
Some of this too we should mention as part of the landscape is and you referenced the Northern Virginia scenario where there hadn't been and I think continues not to have an OTB option, and that whole story too, the Rosies, the Colonial Rosies satellite locations and the OTB network that was also funding purses while the building was being renovated.
Yes. Well, most of our OTBs were in central, southern, and western Virginia. It was always very difficult and expensive to get a referendum passed in Northern Virginia, because under our law, the locality that you propose for an OTB has to pass a referendum. But we now are in Northern Virginia. There is a Rosie's slash OTB in Dumfries, which is just 50 miles short of being in the heart of Northern Virginia. And it has some of our historical horse racing machines in it. I think there are 150 now, but it's probably going to expand much bigger. So it'll give us a presence in Northern Virginia.
The inference is that a lot of things came together really harmoniously. The landscape politically too changed, and in Virginia, which really helped galvanize this whole effort.
Well, it's interesting. I'm an old geezer. I came to Virginia in 1965. And at that time, we had blue laws. You couldn't shop. You couldn't shop on Sundays.
For sure.
Hello?
Connecticut too. We did.
And things have changed within the last probably 5 to 8 years. We started with the HHR machines, and then the legislature passed fantasy sports, and then we had 5 casinos authorized in the state, and then just most recently sports betting. So we're the old Dominion is now into the 21st century, and it's changed quite radically, because the legislators, I think, recognize that people were going to go to West Virginia or Maryland to casinos or for other things. So why not keep the money here in Virginia?
And Frank, I can't remember if we've ever talked about your own horseman background. And you said you came in 65 to Virginia. What was your racing ties?
I bought my first racehorse in 1995 because a friend of mine said, well, look, if you buy a racehorse, you get a better parking spot at the racetrack.
So that's still a motivating factor. Yeah. Believe me, I can tell you that still works.
Ever since then, I've myself or in partnerships owned horses. But I had a day job in Washington practicing law, and I think in about 2005 I lost my mind and went into the racehorse business full time, and that's when I started working with the HBPA, and it's been ever since working and owning a horse or two. So it's been thoroughly enjoyable.
Well, and it's got to feel good to know that the legacy, when you get involved in the game, and we talk about this all the time, about being a good steward of the sport, and knowing that when you're finished with the game, your efforts contributed to something that that obviously has had tremendous positive impact for equine interests and for state coffers and for the game at large. I mean, that's got to be very gratifying.
Yeah, I think what I've learned over the years is that horse racing isn't just for the top 1% of rich folks. 99% cut across the whole demographic.
Absolutely.
And it's just a labor of love to be involved in it. There's not an awful lot of money to be made at the lower levels, but it's just so heartwarming to see the devotion and the hard work that people put into this sport.
What other areas? What else is there to accomplish or affect here, or is it now just?
Well, our ultimate goal, and we told this to the new owners when they were making plans, is to run for 30 days with purses of about averaging $500,000 to $600,000 a day, because our thought was that that would fit well within what is basically a de facto mid-Atlantic circuit. I mean, the days of trying to run 50 or 60 days is gone. It's crazy. We there aren't enough horses, and it doesn't make sense to compete against your neighbors. So we try and rationalize our program. For example, we're running Mondays through Wednesdays. Maryland is running on the weekends. We even overlap only one day with Saratoga, and it works out very well for us. And if we can sustain the high level of purses, I think we'll be in good shape to get quality racing here here in Virginia.
And there's also there's been a little bit of a nice balance in terms of the overnight program as well. I mean, for a while, money was kind of directed toward the two or three big stakes days, Virginia Derby Day and the like, and there was Colonial Turf Cup Day. It feels like there's been a nice balance struck between a stake program and you know, the overnight.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, I mean, for example, we're running maiden special weights at $50,000 a race. Now, that's not bad.
It's a nice number.
And you know, that goes down through the allowance raises, et cetera. So we're hoping to strike a balance. Usually we look to have maybe 20 to 25% of purse money being for stakes, and the other 75 or 80% for basically overnight races. And I think we're pulling that off.
Well, the facility, my first time here, the setting is glorious. The facility is obviously, you know, first rate and brilliantly done. And you know, the team, as you mentioned, whether it's on the racing side and the other, you know, the other infrastructure, it all has just come together into a fabulous mix and match, and it's all working. You know, the having to deal with last year's difficulties, obviously trying to build back from that, but and it does, I will mention this, I didn't say this in the opening, it does seem, for Tina and I were surprised. I mean, we're from New York, you know, living in New York, I was a little surprised by how much it feels like Virginia is just, you know, coming into online, you know, full online in terms of, you know, post-pandemic, as it were.
Well, we've got our fingers crossed.
Yeah, but I'm a little surprised, because we saw a lot of, you know, whether it's the restaurants and things, and there's still, you know, still a lot of masking restriction. It's not completely. So I was a little surprised by that, to be honest.
Well, we're doing fairly well when compared to other states. I think clearly more than I think about 60 to 70%. Of the adult population has been vaccinated, which is a game changer in terms of the COVID situation. And that's particularly true in some of the larger urban areas. And we're hopeful that we don't get a resurgence because of the Delta variant that's now spreading around. But everybody seems to recognize the danger, and hopefully we'll continue to cooperate.
Well, thrilled to be here, Frank, and just a kind of a unique opportunity to you know, come down. Came up last week, and everybody said you should come. So all right, we couldn't resist.
Well, you know, I'd like to invite you to come on the backside, because I think you'll be very impressed. The barns are very modern, very well kept. And it's quite an operation back there. Fortunately, you can't really see it, because you look over the track, you got all those trees.
It's amazing, actually. That's incredible that you've got the actual barnyard, you know, kind of obstructed by, you know, by nature.
And that as you look across and you see that on the right hand side, you see that nice little building that looks like a fancy barn that you'd see in Lexington. That's the HBPA office.
Nice. Who, in fact, that you bring that up, who else should be acknowledged that people should know about that have made things made this all possible?
As I mentioned, the Virginia Equine Alliance is run on a day-to-day basis by Jeb Hannum.
Oh, sure.
He's an outstanding director. It's kind of a funny story. Debbie and I shared an office up in Warrenton, and this young man walks in one day, just moved down from Pennsylvania with his family, looking for a job. And it turns out it was Jeb, and I said, "Well, if we get a job for you," he's done a wonderful job. But you know, I can't emphasize enough the cooperative spirit that exists within our industry between the breeders and the owners and trainers, and I think that's in large part responsible for whatever success we've had and will have.
You know, on that topic, actually, I'll give you one more follow-up. I mentioned how, particularly this summer, with the situation at Churchill, you had an influx of horsemen that it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they keep coming back. I mean, when you've got somebody like Brett Calhoun, you know, coming and bringing a you know, his A string, obviously. We're going to talk to Michelle Lovell in a little bit, who's got the favorite, of course, later in the De Haas. You certainly this year got some horsemen that this may open their eyes and they might make Colonial Summers, a regular visit.
Well, we're hopeful, but it's kind of with mixed emotions because I have a lot of
the friends. Locals.
Well, I have a lot of friends in Kentucky, you know, and I don't want to be accused of stealing their horsemen. But I will say that a number of the newcomers have gone out of their way to say, "Wow, this is really a nice place. Everybody takes good care of us here." You know, so we're saying, "Well,
exactly.
if you think it makes sense, come back and see us next year."
Well, you've got some luxuries here, including the double wide turf course and the potential. I haven't even talked about the lighting and you know that option. You know, you've historically run at night quite a bit, and some of that was temperature was hot temperatures in the day.
You know, we have very hot summers, particularly in July and August. So we started running at I think last year or the year before we were at 5:30 post, but we have lights on the turf course, so we can. And 90% of our races are on the turf course.
Yeah.
So we can run later in the day.
Well, and that ended up being something that I imagine when the facility was designed and built, that while turf racing certainly was established in this country in the 90s by a wide margin, it wasn't what it's become. And so to have this much turf and have the two courses like this gives you a real luxury that, given the era and how much turf racing has worked for at every level. I mean, in terms of the handicapping or the horse playing community, the draws bigger fields. It's a handle generator. I mean, it really works, and you guys have been a beneficiary.
And to add another criteria, the aesthetics.
Yeah.
I think I really enjoy watching horses run on grass.
Yeah.
And I think that's generally true in the across the board.
I there's no doubt about it. As some refer to it, the proper surface.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Who is that? That there's somebody. Somebody up in the
probably European.
It's a European origin, but it somebody in the Capital District. I think a Capital OTB. One of the broadcasters used to call it the proper surface. And from a betting standpoint, and also frankly on how much easier it is on the horses.
Oh yes. I mean, you just look
to
at
be
the,
honest.
Look at the fatality rates, and they're much lower on the. on the grass.
Well, Frank Petromalo Jr. I don't want to omit that. Outstanding opportunity to come. I appreciate everybody's invitation and urging, and I'm delighted to be here and to see Colonial Downs, and then to, you know, translate that into invitations to everybody to fit it in. And you know, I know that at this time of year, it can be yeah, tough. Maybe for people moving that make their trip a pilgrimage to Saratoga, you know, fit this in. You've got the front part of the week, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and then on to Saratoga, or on your way back from Saratoga, yes, heading south.
Well, I'm originally from New York, so I don't speak Southern, but I'm learning.
Yeah, well, you've been here long enough. You should be acclimated by now.
So y'all come back and see us again.
Well done. Where in New York are you from?
Rochester.
Oh, you really?
Yeah.
Oh, our son Zach and wife and baby are in Rochester.
Oh, no kidding.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I still go back there all the time.
We listen upstate. I went to Colgate spent plenty of time. It's pretty amazing. Nice. You came to D.C. on your legal career?
I came here to go to law school at Georgetown, and I've been here ever since.
Yeah. And you never left?
Never left.
Interesting. Interesting.
Nobody's born in D.C. Everybody comes.
Exactly.
D.C.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Frank Petromalo Jr., everybody, and the HVPA, the Virginia Equine Alliance, and everybody that worked so hard to keep this building alive and the concept alive, and the payout, the payoff, the result has been really, really outstanding. Frank, thanks so much. Glad, really appreciate you coming by, and from, you know, from equine interests everywhere. Thanks for, you know, for the great heritage in Virginia of equine life. This was well worth saving, and the results speak for themselves.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your inviting me.
Not at all. Frank Petromalo Jr., everybody, and the origins really of the way Colonial evolved. And how it, you know, the right from the start, and then, you know, then a difficult period, too many good minds and dedicated people worked together managed to not just secure a future, but ensure, really, ongoing success. Let's take a top-of-the-hour break, a formal break, after we had a couple of little hiccups. Rich Migliori is going to join us next. I got Nick Hahn here. Nick Hahn, outstanding. We got to get Nick in at some point. And we got the whole staff coming in as they make their way in for the day. Don Winfrey's here too, and I've got to twist his arm. This is as close physically as I've had an opportunity. Every Derby fortnight, I say we're going to get Don Winfrey, and then he leaves, and I don't get him. So we're going to make sure to get Don on here as well. Back after a break. At the races, we're Colonial Downs. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.